Yeah. All good?
All good.
Headset on?
Yeah.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. Today, we are just a review show because there is no fight event this weekend coming. The weekend that we're at right now, because it's Sunday, we figured we'd turn this around pretty quickly. We're going to review UFC 270. First of all, shout out to the sponsors, Unbound Merino, been with us for a long time. That was one of my... We need to get some stuff over to me, Unbound, that says not for Veronica on it, because at least half of...
I tried to take
that
off.
Yeah, and she tried to steal this today as well. I have to wear it all the time now, so... Because if I take it, even in the shower, I mean, honestly, I have showered with this on and everything. If I take it off for a moment, she's going to try and grab it, and then it just disappears into a hidden place somewhere in the house where I can't get back to it. So... That's a lovely hoodie. You stole it.
My beanie is good too.
Your beanie is lovely as well.
Yeah,
it looks great in photos.
I love the colors.
So our discount code is Outlaw. Outlaw, Jamie?
Yeah.
Outlaw without the ED on the end. This gets confusing. We need some consistency here.
Well, you are the Outlaw.
Outlaw, that's very true, is the code. And you get, go on, Jamie, 15% off and free shipping in the US. If you spend over $100, we love Unbound, and they love us, fortunately. Okay, we have another new sponsor on board, which is perfect for us, and you're already halfway through it.
I'm a little bit more than half. This is my second cup.
Packed coffee. Packed. Not as in packed, like the box is packed. Packed as in like a blood pact, like an agreement. The agreement is between these guys that have set this up and the farmers. So they're paying about 65% above fair trade price for the beans, and they've got a direct relationship with the farmers. So the way this works, which suits us perfectly because we don't have to think about it, it just arrives when we need coffee. It's a mail order thing, and you can set up your subscription. So, hang on a minute, I've got the
read
here.
Plus you get a free little dripper thing in the first subscription.
I'm getting to that.
All right, but I wanted to beat you to it.
See, this is what happens when you have too much caffeine, you see? Bouncing off the walls. Should we sprint
I just saw all the fights. So
exactly. Yeah, okay. So, make a pact to make better coffee. We'll help you get started with a free V60 kit, which is this. That's worth £11 with your first order. So that is the dripper, What's it called? We use one of these every day. We love these things. So it's like a coffee dripper. And in there is the scoop for your coffee in a beautiful teal colour. My favourite. And there's the dripper, just there. And in the bottom of there are 40 filter sheets as well. So that will cover you for your first 3 days' worth of coffee. If you get through it as much as we do. Which is why I'm... It is delicious coffee. I am buzzing on it right now. So we have opened this one today. So anyway, hang on a minute. I'm not finished yet. So go to packedcoffee.com. That is packedcoffee.com. Create your flexible coffee subscription. Enter the code OUTLAWED with the ED at checkout and get your free brewing kit. You will need one of these because it makes life a lot easier. And get your specialty coffee through the letterbox. Don't wait. Go to packedcoffee.com and create your free coffee subscription box. The code is valid when you create the coffee plan. I've had a look on the website. So it's like a five-step thing. You go through, you go decaf or regular. I don't know who drinks decaf coffee. It's, I mean, you know.
Yeah, you
right?
want it for
you
the...
Want the
you want the... No.
No. No, okay. You don't. No, you don't.
I mean, I wouldn't know what it's like. I figured.
Anyway, packed coffee. Make sure you get on board. Okay, let's get into some fights. So we'll start at the bottom of the card, shall we?
Yes. I was so sad on this one.
You were so sad. Oh. Well, you were pulling for Kay all the way through it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was like really excited.
And you have a theory about when... So has Kay gone up a weight class?
Well, she's kind of bounced between the two. She's kind of...
Hang on. There we go.
Sorry. Is that better?
You're doing an Owen Oxley. There we go.
That feels like I'm like looking on, at it kind of cross-eyed.
Hang on. Well, you don't have to look at it. You just have to talk into it.
So she has gone like up and down between straw weight and flyweight. I think it depends on like how she does. And then she like moves weight. But yeah.
Like her last one was against Cory McKenna at straw weight. Before that, she was straw weight. Yeah, I mean... you've got, so she, okay. Her last fight at flyweight was 2019. So you've got a theory of when a fighter decides they're going up a weight class, they get one of the biggest fighters in that weight division up.
That's not a theory. That's a fact. that is a fact. Anytime a fighter goes up, they give him the biggest, tallest, rangiest,
is that
strongest
just
fighter.
Is it just to check?
Yeah,
it's
just to like demoralize. Like you go like, oh yeah, you don't like weight
enough?
Cuts.
You don't like
bathtubs and dying. Here's the biggest person we can find on the entire roster.
I'm gonna test the theory. What was
my last fight? I fought like the tallest.
That's
person
very true. That's
in
very
the
true.
Freaking world.
That's very true. That was like a National Geographic episode. Anyway. I was just going into your theory and seeing who. You see RDA, when he made his welterweight debut, he fought Tariq Saffedine, who's kind of a rat, but then he fought Neil Magny, who made him look a little tiny. So yeah, all right, okay, fair enough. So why were you disappointed anyway? You'd never got into that.
Well, because you were right, and she won. Jasmine won. That's why.
Yeah, but
I picked.
Oh, that's why you were wrong. Oh, it's purely because you were wrong. That's why you were upset, because you were wrong on your pick.
I mean,
I thought you were like pulling for short people.
Yeah.
I thought it was the whole thing about like, you know, height and reach disadvantage, and you were.
Well, yeah, obviously I was into that because like I'm not into you losing a whole bunch of weight to fight.
And you think Jasmine does? Does she? Does she cut loads of weight? I mean, she's tall.
I mean, she looks like she's naturally very thin.
5'7" she is.
But. Yeah, there's no way you're making 125. Like, I know some people are just naturally very, like, light in weight and don't easily, you know, put on anything.
I think she's built kind of like Marina Rodriguez. Kind of
yeah, Marina Rodriguez, like,
she's fucking huge.
She, like, yeah, she loses a lot of weight, though. Do you see when she walks in, like, her butt's all, like, scooped in?
when
you lose weight, the first thing, especially bathtub, it's like, it's the eyes here go down, this goes down, and your butt just goes...
This is the science of weight-cutting cosmetics. So you get your eyes sink in.
This is the first thing that happens.
Your eyes sink in and your butt goes flat.
No, and the cheeks. This,
oh, your cheeks.
Yeah, this goes in.
All cheeks.
Both cheeks.
So it's just.
And eyes. What happened to this?
It's protesting you being on the show again, I think. Because you're causing trouble.
People in the comments liked it before. Thank you. Except for all of you that said I should get my passport taken away. I said his name wrong. I'm not going to say it this time around.
I still don't know how to say it. All three commentators said it different.
So you guys better be on their like Instagram commenting that.
So how do you say it? Hang on, we'll get to that.
No.
We'll get to that later. You've still got time to practice it. Right. Come on, screen. For fuck's sake. Can't get the technology these days. Okay. It's doing it again. It's starting to annoy me now. So what else you got to say about that?
Well,
what could Kay have done better?
I think like her striking was a little bit slow. Jasmine's striking.
Okay.
Like in the third round was a little bit slow. I just felt like Kay did really well in getting off like on angles and striking, but then she would go back right into the center line. So it was almost like Jasmine threw a punch and she went out, got a punch, then got back in, got hit with that same punch that she threw.
Yeah.
Good, great, like wrestling control, great, like keeping, she kept her elbows in really tight. And if you ever go to like a jiu-jitsu competition, especially like white or blue belt, there's always those like really strong wrestlers. And like they'll take you down, and that's what they do because you get 2 points. They'll take you down, and they'll just really keep like tight elbows right on like your hip bone, and kind of controlling. Just and they're happy to wait it out, and then the person's always trying to get something going, but it's really difficult when the person is just disengaging completely with it.
Mm.
Although she did land some good shots, it was like if you would cut all the shots she landed in the fight, it wouldn't be a lot of the fight she was landing.
Yeah,
you know those shots. It was mostly about keeping that elbow tight, which I think she did great.
Chunk of top control, didn't she? As well. 6 minutes. 6 minutes. 99 shots total. 2 or 3 takedowns, and 1 of 7 takedowns for Kay. That was one thing that where height was causing Hansen some real issues, because there were a couple of times where she shot in and she was hands together, double leg, and she was trying to lift, and Jasmine's feet were still touching the floor even when she was kind of half stood up.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know. I mean, is she caught between weight classes or does she go back down now?
Well, she has made quite a few in straw weight, but...
So, oh, come on. So do you think the UFC's theory of let's give them the biggest fighter and see if they actually like this weight class has worked this time around?
Well, it's not like she's really been put... Because even earlier in her career, she has done straw weight, fly weight. So it hasn't been like she was straw weight and then moved up.
Yeah,
and it she's not worked had many out, fights.
But... I wonder if there's any consistency with... So her record's 7-5, and how many of her losses were flyweight?
Yeah, but like, for example, one of her losses, she lost a split and then went up and won a... It was an exhibition, but it was an exhibition at flyweight. Then another one in flyweight, and then she went to strawweight, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
What was the next one? Vanessa. Oh, yes. This was fun.
This was the one I was. This was fun, on.
And this one shifted straight away. See, so Silvana has got good boxing. She's got a good straight jab cross, but she's also got that wicked overhand, which we talked about in the podcast. And she cracked Vanessa with it clean, timed her perfectly. But then Vanessa was able to scramble for that arm.
Silvana was also doing that little, like, Brandon Moreno
shake.
She
was doing
that
right at the start, the little kind of lean onto one side.
Yeah.
I'm coming this way. No, I'm coming this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it. The calf kicks she was doing were working wonders as well. I didn't think she was going to armbar her, although I'm pretty sure she does have most of her submission wins come by armbar.
Yeah. She does attack a lot from her back. She's always climbing up on it with her guard and stuff, but...
Yeah. I just felt like if Silvana would have kind of trapped, because she had gone up and her hips were like free to move and rotate. If Silvana would have made a wedge right there, then she would have been able to like either like pull her arm out or create more pressure. That like allowance of hip mobility allowed her to go into that underhook and then like spin it all around. And that's one of the things with arm bars that... If somebody's in the bottom and they're getting that arm bar, it's like, it's not only about stacking, it's also about like controlling those hips, because if they do flip you over, then it gets more and more complicated to defend.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought she was going to be able to get out of that, because if you watch the way that she does it, well, first of all, where she was controlling it, she was doing what Andre Muniz does and controlling it under her armpit for a while, which I think is going to come into MMA a bit more. But then as she swept her and she was attacking a regular armbar, if you look at the position that Silvana's in when she taps, her arm's more in a Americana position. Mm-hmm. It's actually, I think it was more shoulder joint than elbow. And I think she was more tapping because she could feel that she had no strength there to like recover that position.
Yeah.
Good recovery from Vanessa though. Cause I mean, she was dropped hard.
Yeah.
And as one of the commentators said, I think it was DC, it's rare that you see that kind of power in straw weight.
But maybe it's because she was standing like Brandon Moreno with so much power in that, like, so much weight on that lead leg.
Loaded forward.
She was completely and was able to torque as well.
Yeah.
I thought the submission was pretty sick.
Okay.
And then she jumped on Joe Rogan.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Which Joe was ecstatic about, you could tell. He was really enjoying himself.
He was kind of trying to work in the mic.
Yeah.
With her
where?
Legs. Like.
Working where? I don't know.
No, that's not what I said.
That's what you said.
No.
I'm just repeating what you said.
Okay,
word for
not
word.
Like that.
Okay. Next one. Matt Favola against Valdez.
Yeah, we both
this
messed
was,
up on this one.
This was fucking great fun though, wasn't it? How many times did he get knocked down? Like one after the next after the next.
There was one where he got clipped and then got clipped on the way down as well, and he folded on his legs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he did that
bad.
Like that Stipe when he got knocked out against Ngannou and he fell onto his leg. Or you probably won't remember the Crow Cop fight when he got knocked out by Gonzaga with the head kick. And he like landed on it. Oh, it was fucking awkward. There's been a few of those, you know. The other one was the Tank Abbott, really, really early on, and he caught a guy clean with a right hook against the fence, and just he like slid down the fence and was like twisted in like a heap. It was fucking ugly. Yeah. Anyway, So we're going to introduce a new segment right now, Jamie. We mentioned it earlier. We're going to call it MMA Love Children or something like that. Fucking Matt Frivola looks like a combination of Iwan Kutalaba and Canelo Alvarez. Tell me I'm wrong.
That's pretty accurate.
He does, absolutely.
That's pretty accurate.
Anyway, if you've got any more of those, put them in the comments below. Yeah. Fighters that look like a combination of two other combat sports athletes. Why not? Shits and giggles. Anyway, that was a good fight. I enjoyed it. I was expecting more from Valdez.
I just thought, I was like, oh, make it like the contenders where you just somehow come out of that round and get a knockout.
Fucking Frivola came out and threw everything. It was just wild at times. Fun to watch, but it's a risky style, that is.
I have nothing to say.
No, there's not much more to say about that, was it? It was a fun fight.
Yeah.
Minute 45. Anyway, let's move on. Tony Gravely against Simon Oliveira. How many guillotines did he escape? How many times? So you were annoyed all the way through this one because Oliveira kept jumping for that guillotine. He kept attempting the guillotine and never finishing it.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a lot because the guillotine is still one of the most effective submissions in MMA.
I think there was
a really nice guillotine later on the card with Saeed Nurmagomedov. Remember that one?
Yes.
And we're jumping around a little bit. But my argument is that there are so many times that people attempt guillotines and don't get them that the statistics of guillotine success is much lower than people think it is. There are just a lot in MMA because a lot of people try guillotines and you know, so there are going to be more, you know, by default.
Because that's the first thing you try, like, especially with a wrestler that's never dealt with guillotine because they'll like never get attacked. So maybe you'll get a few guillotines before he kind of like grows like smart to it and then defends it well.
He tried a few different ones. I think he escaped like, what was it, like 11 of them?
Yeah. Well, he went from like arm in to then like low elbow guillotine, and the way he was able to get his arm all the way back,
yeah,
was crazy though.
Yeah. I thought Gravely was good. Gravely. I don't know what his name is. I thought Gravely was good. I thought his submission defense was good. But I don't know why he continued to level change into guillotines. It wasn't until the third round when he made that adjustment where he level changed. As soon as Oliveira wrapped his neck, he ducked under and took his back. That was third round it took him to then. He got caught in so many. I mean, his sub defense was great, but it's too risky, that is.
Which was there one that you thought was like almost?
I think one of those first ones in the first round, probably that second one where he was stuck in it for a little while, and it was like Gravely was almost out of it, and then Oliveira was able to recover his guard. Do you remember? Because I was like, he's out of it. He's going to be able to pop his knees through. But he wasn't doing a great deal of fighting with his legs. He was just posting and trying to drive Oliveira's legs past his knees. And it was, yeah.
Were you disappointed that he didn't, like, try to finish it more? I guess not.
I think it was either, once he got him down, it was I've got to control him best I can because he's going to scramble and then I'm going to be fighting guillotines again. Because he was attacking them from all different angles, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. This next one was beautiful. Jack Della Maddalena against Pete Rodriguez. I felt kind of bad for Pete Rodriguez because he was only four fights into his career. It was a bit early for him. He's a bit undersized for the weight class as well. Most likely, if he continues with his career, he's going to be down at 155. I think he's, what, 5'8", 5'7"? And he just didn't look like... Oh, he's 5'9". Okay, a little bit short, a little bit taller. But he just didn't look like a welterweight. He looked
is
like
he 5'9", or is he like a share dog?
Well, I mean, that's true. He's a Tapology 5'9", which could be 5'7". He just didn't look very tall, and he didn't look comfortable in there. He looked like he had good hands, like he had sharp boxing, but he didn't look like he had the, I don't know, the experience that Della Maddalena has got. I mean, I know he's only had, what, 13 fights now, but he was a prospect coming out of Australia, Maddalena was. Beautiful finish.
It was also like, I just felt it wasn't, with him, it wasn't just about throwing punches. It was about drawing him into punches or countering. And it was a lot more than just like striking. It's just then going out and being like, let's just throw bombs at each other. It was I'm gonna draw you in with this, and I'm gonna counter you with this, or it was just beautiful.
Yeah. It was a lot more technical than I expected from someone with a nose that's shaped like that.
Yeah, that's bad.
You said when we were watching that might be the worst. What do you say? Cauliflower nose? Yeah. That might be the worst one you've seen. When we were watching Nigel Benn fights yesterday, there's a guy that he fought, and I'm sure his name's O'Hara. And as Nigel Benn was beating him up in the first round, the commentators were talking about the guy's nose. It was completely flat. O'Hara, I'm sure his name is. I'll look it up.
There should be like an equal name for it. Because what was it? Mike Perry?
Yeah, Mike Perry's nose. Well,
his nose went like that. There should be like cauliflower ear. There should be like a type of nose.
A type of nose.
Yeah.
Like jogger's nipple, but for MMA. You know what jogger's nipple is, no?
No.
Oh, well, yeah, see. That's a true thing. Tennis elbow, golfer's elbow. They're things.
Yeah.
You know?
But like a vegetable and nose.
Okay, so what vegetable would it be? What? Turnip nose. It's going to have to be something small and smashed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mashed potato nose.
I don't know.
It was pretty bad, but it wasn't as bad as this guy's. I'm sure his name was O'Hara. O'Hara. O'Hanna. It was bad. I mean, it was like, they were talking about it in the first round. And they were saying, yeah, he's decided that when he retires from boxing, he's going to get his nose rebuilt. Like, holy shit, there was a lot of rebuilding to do. Why would you bother?
Some people, it makes like a huge difference. They go from like, ugh, to like, ooh.
Yeah, but then other people just look weird because you're like, that's not your nose though, is it?
Yeah, when it's just a little bit like too tiny and sharp, it's like, okay, this is not Disney.
Yeah.
Do you have the picture of the guy or what?
I think
Jamie should pull it up.
Yeah, Jamie.
During this.
I'll find it and we'll drop it in the screen so you can see what I mean. He looks a bit like one of them ghouls off Fallout. You play Fallout New Vegas? Anyway. Oh, I need Owen Oxley to get that reference.
Okay, sorry.
Oh. Okay, this next one was, if co-main event wasn't Fight of the Night, it was this one. Victor Henry against Jaime Barcelos. I called it. I had a good feeling about Victor Henry because, you know, he had 26 fights coming in. Second of all, he's trained by Josh Barnett, who doesn't waste his time investing in anybody. If you train by Josh Barnett, he sees something in you. And the point of difference, I mean, it's amazing, really, because Barcelos...
Point of difference is he's trained with you.
No, I mean, honestly, it was like, he mentioned legends in the post-fight interview. It was maybe a couple of training sessions. We didn't train together much, but we did cross paths at legends for sure. He's been around a long time. But the point of difference is he looked like the younger, fresher fighter, and Barcelos looked like he was coming towards the end of a long career. But Barcelos has had 19 fights compared to 27 for Victor Henry.
I don't know if I mentioned this in the last one, but like... I think the weight cut is kind of an issue.
For Barcelos?
Yeah, or like emptying the tank might be. Because I think...
He's 34 and he's cutting to bantamweight. He's 5'7". He's been doing it for a long while. His body might just be giving up on him a little bit, you know? It does happen. Has he had some... I mean, he's not had really, really like tough fights. He's had a couple of like long decisions, like hard fights, but... He's not taking a real beating. Maybe it's, where is he out of? Is it Novo Nyao? Refit fighters. Maybe he just spars too hard. I don't know. I just felt like Victor Henry was slick. He was like, I mean, it was very kind of very reactive. He was watching what was happening and reacting off it really well. Barcelos was just kind of walking forward and clubbing a bit. And, you know, he did have some moments towards the end of the fight where he caught Victor Henry with combinations, but that's only because there was a bit of desperation in there. Because he was bloodied up and he had to close range.
Yeah.
I thought Victor Henry looked really good, especially on 2 weeks' notice, you got to think. And his post-fight speech as well about,
really,
you know,
nice.
Being a martial artist and all that kind of stuff and always being ready. And, yeah, gives us all something to think about. Makes me feel like I'm being lazy. He was in great shape for 2 weeks out. Really good. And a great win. I'm excited to see where he goes. Barcelos, I don't know.
So do you agree with what, I think it was DC that said that, it might be because he's a coach and he's always in the gym and helping people out. Do you think that plays a role in how you approach fights?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I think it does. Because you take yourself out of the equation. And I think it's difficult to do when you're the fighter because you always kind of, even if it's subconsciously, you kind of position yourself in the fight. Like, well, what I would do this. Whereas if you're a coach, I think you can look at the person in front of you, the student, and go, okay, this is what you do. And I think these skills that you've got are best applied this way. You know, like if you train with someone who's a power puncher, they're always going to try and tell you to go for a knockout, even if you're not a power puncher, right? If you've got a jiu-jitsu guy in the corner, they're always going to try and get his close distance and take the guy down, even if you're a kickboxer. It just, you know, people have always got their own personal kind of lean on it. And I think because Victor Henry's an MMA fighter, he's trained by an MMA fighter, like a veteran MMA fighter, Josh Barnett. And Josh Barnett was an MMA fighter amongst guys that were still like karate guy and wrestling guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He was like one of those really early day MMA fighters that had striking and grappling. He could wrestle. He had good catch wrestling, good submissions as well. I remember him beating Stefan Struve by armbar, like early UFC. Maybe, fuck, was it? No, sorry, not Stefan Struve. It was Semi Schilt. 7 foot tall, must be in UFC 24 or something like that. And I remember it because it came out while I was at university, and he caught him with this wicked armbar, and he was just bleeding all down his nose. And as he got up, Josh Barnett went, he used to be the babyface assassin. Anyway, the point is, MMA fighters training MMA fighters who are already training other MMA fighters. Like, there's a shedding process each generation, and Victor Henry's in that process of shedding. You could say the same thing about, what's his name? I can see his face. James Krause. Same situation, right?
I was just thinking that.
Yeah. So he's the same situation. I think you can see that in the way that he fights. He's got a lot of different angles he can attack from. He's got a very diverse skill set. And I think if he was able to sit down and research his opponent before a training camp, he would have a bit more of a specific game plan for how to approach him. I think he just came in ready for Barcelos and was just like, well, let's, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Do you think any of it has to... Oh, I just lost my train of thought. But, oh, yeah, with the MMA, like, you're saying MMA fighters, training MMA fighters and stuff. Do you think that kind of takes away from, for example, like a good boxer or you being really good at wrestling? Does it kind of make everyone, I guess... the same?
A little bit, yeah. I think, I mean, bad habits will get passed on as well. And sometimes people will learn things, they'll learn how to do something and not why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And those bad habits get passed on. Like when Dillashaw won the belt, there were loads of guys in the gym. Same with McGregor. Like when McGregor was, after McGregor knocked out Aldo and beat Mendez, all of a sudden there were loads of people in the gym that were, they were mimicking him. And that's one really quick way of learning how to do something, is to copy someone that does it really well. It doesn't mean you can understand why they're doing it, though. Like, you can see why they're doing it and you can copy it, but the understanding, the principle behind it sometimes isn't passed on. I'm not saying that necessarily is the case with Victor Henry, but I do think is the case. Like, people with bad habits will pass on those bad habits. I think what we'll see in the coming years is like teams of MMA fighters coming together. So you'll have like two or three MMA fighters that have got different specialisms but all have an MMA mindset or an MMA background. I think you always need a couple of sets of eyes. Like Jimmy and I work well together because we look at things from a different way.
Yeah. So. But how would you figure out like the process behind like a shot? Oh, I get you can imitate how they do it and stuff, but how do you figure out, you know, the reasons, the setups, or
I don't know. I mean, I think that. if you do it enough, I think you'll realize why something's working. But then you have to be paying attention to that as well. Like the best thing to do is to watch the person do it and watch the fights over and over again and see what consistencies. So, like, say for example, like Dominic Cruz has got this nice little thing where when he's being pressured and this door's being closed, he still moves towards that closed door because he knows that they're trying to stop him going that way. So if he continues moving that way, they're gonna overcompensate. Mm-hmm. And as they step across, then he uses that timing to clear out and go the other direction. Sometimes he'll walk himself into a trapped corner because he's looking to do that slingshot hook off the back of it.
Yeah.
So, like, you can copy the footwork, you can copy why, you know, you can copy how he's doing it, and all right, okay, he's doing this with his feet, and then he jogs out, and then he comes back in. And you can copy the rhythm and the movement, but unless you understand he's doing it up against the fence when he's being pressured to set up either this shot or an escape out to the left, then you're missing the fundamental part of it. And you can't, like, if you're copying somebody else, you can see them doing it. That's the best thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're copying them, it's because they're doing something successfully. So you can watch them doing it successfully. And if they're doing it well, then they've probably done it well previously in their career. So you can go back and find other examples. But it's just a case of watching and like picking it apart. I think it's there for anybody. I really do think that. I don't think it's like you have to have a particular type of mind or training to do it. You just have to watch it because it's patterns. And you can figure, especially if you've got a martial arts background, like you're already training, you've got a foundation to plug it into. Just watch. Like, obsess about a fighter and like mimic a fighter, but watch them and watch what their opponent does when they're doing those things that make them successful, you know? Anyway, what about the next one? Trevin Giles against Michael Morales.
Okay, last question before we get into that. which fighter right now do you think would be like, you should imitate that one because they're the most MMA complete? And yeah. Well, I'm going to Google later.
I mean, well, one that we've been watching a lot is Corey Sandhagen. And I do think that he is probably... He's not the forefront when it comes to the technical abilities, but I think he's one of the most thinking fighters in the UFC.
Yeah.
Let me just have a quick look at the rankings.
I think that's kind of like a mindset in Colorado, like in Denver.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I think so.
like a community mindset. They kind of have the same, I don't know, like approach to things in the same.
And then you've got Gaethje there, and yeah. Whitman and Usman sometimes, and Rose, and there's a lot of different skills there as well. Peter Yan's another good example. Like Peter Yan, you can see that he knows what he's doing, and there's not a great deal of fat in his game. Like with Corey Sandhagen, he'll use movement to pull you in or push you back or to test your reactions when he does something. Like he'll sometimes hang and offer his chin and try and get you to throw something so he can see what you're going to throw. You know, same thing with that last round with Figueiredo Moreno. Like, you know, in that last 45 seconds or last minute, I think one of the corner team shouts 1 minute left or 1 minute. And all of a sudden you see Brandon Moreno starting to do that kind of moving forward. And he was moving his head because he knows he needs to keep his head moving. He also knew that as soon as he stepped forward and committed to something, Figueiredo was going to come with big power because he wanted a big finish. And Moreno, at no point really did he feint to try and draw that shot. So he was moving, but then he moves himself into range and attacks and then eats the counters.
Yeah.
Like, instead of like using those feints, and Peter Yan makes you do so much without him doing anything. And that's really nice because you can see him reading you, and like, it's like, there's like a computation going on, like reading all that information and taking it in and formulating a plan. And then he'll start. And I also like Peter Yan because there's a meanness to him, which I think is a benefit in MMA. Like, he is nasty, you know, he likes to be mean.
Throws knees on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. Pushes his look a little bit, like Figueiredo does, you know, like Figueiredo does. You know, it's war in there, you know, you've got to get the right mentality. I think there are a lot of fighters that are, like, we're seeing a new wave of fighters coming through now, and what we're seeing is, oh, everyone looks like Dominic Cruz and TJ Dillashaw and stuff. But then what you're also finding is that some of these fighters, they can move and act like those fighters, but they don't have the same
substance behind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
No, I get what you mean.
Yeah. Okay. Main card time, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll let you move on.
Thanks. But Michael Morales against Trevin Giles. Felt kind of bad for Trevin Giles in this one because he was doing all right, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, Morales, he fights like a young kid, in my opinion. He's a little bit kind of like in with the big boys now, you know?
Yeah.
I felt that when he was on his he was Contender Series, wasn't he? I felt that in his interview on the Contender Series. Then I felt that in his fight on the Contender Series. And then against. I thought in this one he's going to be like, yeah, okay, right, I'm here now. Made it to the UFC, and he was still a little bit like.
Yeah, but did you see the amount of flags there were? Oh, and yeah, the yeah, walk yeah, out,
for sure. Massive pressure.
That's.
But we talked about it on the podcast last week, though, didn't we? Like he was like the pressure that he was carrying from. I've made it. You know, this is my opportunity for my family, and it was just like he was layering pressure on him.
And he's only a young interview kid. Was
he nailed it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So, how was the translator? Because obviously, you can understand what he's saying. There seemed to be like a lot of passion in what he was saying, but he also seemed to be very kind of camera ready. Like he was good on the mic. He seemed.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember exactly if the The thing with translating is it's sometimes difficult. Like if you're like, oh, I'm so happy. I can't believe I did this. I trained so hard. And you translate, I'm so happy. I can't believe I did this. I trained very hard. You know,
you don't get the emotion in it.
You're not going to get the same thing. And for him, it was a lot of passion. And although the translator was really happy and I think he did a good job, it was really inspiring the way he conducted and very, I feel like, mature as well.
Yeah.
Very like young man, very mature in what he does. I thought it was beautiful.
It's 79-inch reach. That's massive for a welterweight. That's massive. And he's 22. 13-fight win streak. Definitely one to watch out for. It was kind of like Trevin Giles was like, okay, let's see where he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he's not quite ready yet, he's going to get clipped and he's going to get hurt. But I thought it looked really good. Oh, come on now. Adobe's now trying to update me. Remind me later. Go away. Okay, what's next?
Saeed Nurmagomedov.
Go on. Tell me about this choke then, because you loved it.
Wait.
Did you want to talk about the Saeed? Spinning stuff?
No. I'm just trying to like... Did he go for
yeah,
Saeed?
Did he pick him to win? I must have done. I've not actually got the results up. I can't remember who we picked, but I'm pretty sure I was doing all right.
Yeah, okay. No, I did horrible in this card. Sorry, this is my first time.
I'm saying names wrong and shit.
I know. I'm still worried about the next one. Okay.
We'll just dub it. We'll take John Anik, because you know he was saying it right.
Yeah.
We'll take John Anik's voice and just dub it in over yours.
Yeah.
Every time you say it, you can... Andre Fihau.
Okay, so the submission was absolutely beautiful. And I love the way he went in and went for a figure four, which is much harder to pop your head out. Which, if you see the earlier fights with, Oliveira?
Yeah.
The times that he went like a what do you call it? Like a low elbow guillotine. He had it and he almost had it, but he just... kind of and like was able to pop out at the end, which when you have that lock, you can bring somebody to the ground. You can, you know, like turn them. You can do so much. There's such a great control, especially if you have the long arms that he does have. Yeah. It was, yeah, I loved it.
What about the spinning back fist to a back kick? That was pretty slick. That was something Raymond Daniels would be happy with.
Yeah,
like spinning back fist, bam, and then straight into a spinning back kick afterwards.
Oh.
He's very slick. I loved it so much. And Cody Stamen's a good win for him as well, because he's a bit like Trevin Giles. He's like a good litmus test in the division.
Yeah, I was worried if the fight would have gone further though, because Nurmagomedov started spinning, and that was the one thing that I was a little bit scared about was the overspinning and, you know, like just doing it a little bit too much to where Cody would be able to time it and go in and take him down. Mm-hmm. Maybe he got a little bit too excited and that's kind of why the choke went on. But I would have been more nervous for him to get such an amazing win, especially when a win happens that fast.
Yeah.
Usually, like, if you start the fight again, it won't be, like, as quick.
Yeah.
You know.
But then, you know, the thing is, if he's not bothered about getting taken down... then he can be doing that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, he did give his back a couple of times on those spins. You know, I've just noticed. So Saeed's got a... Saeed's only loss in the UFC is to Haony Barcelos. Nurmagomedov against Victor Henry would be a really good fight.
Yeah,
that would be sick. A really good fight.
That'd be sick.
Yeah. He looks taller than 5'8", do you not think?
Mm.
He makes everybody look really short, I always think.
Maybe he's just the only one not lying about his height.
Maybe. Maybe.
I mean, like, I'll admit, I kind of went, I rounded up on my height. But everybody does.
Do you think there's unfair pressure on him because his last name is Nurmagomedov? Do you think people hear that and they're like, okay, this guy's going to be good? You can't give him a shit opponent. He's going to have to fight someone tough.
Well, I think, yeah, there is a lot of pressure just because, like, the commentators, every single fight that he's been in, mention Khabib and mention that they're not related and mention that they're good friends. So,
yeah,
with that,
just to lessen your expectations, that is. So don't, they're not related. Don't expect too much. It's just a coincidence. I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, he did.
I think for this division, his height and his reach and his calmness, he's like Zabit Magomed Sharapov minus the Michel Pereira tendencies that Zabit's got that exhaust him. Like, yeah. Zabit's a bit explosive and a bit fiery and a bit wild, and I don't think that that's going to last him over five rounds. Whereas Saeed, although he likes to spin every now and then, he likes a bit of flair in his game, he doesn't waste too much energy doing it.
Oh, with that back kick.
That was slick.
I wouldn't even stop spinning if I had a back kick like that. I would just start the fight and just go one spin kick to the other. And
just... I think he was just trying to get a reaction out of Joe Rogan. Okay, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah.
Are we on to... Oh, no, okay. Do you want to announce this one?
Okay.
Michel Pereira, go on.
Michel Pereira versus André Filalio.
Is that how it is?
I don't know. I'm currently reading a comment that says André Filalio is pronounced F-E-E-A-L-Yo. So if you got me messed up, then it's your fault.
Filalio.
Yeah.
André.
In the end, all the commentators said it different, and Bruce Buffer said it different. And I think I'll go more for how Bruce Buffer said it, because he, like, doesn't he check and
stuff? So you're going to have to yell it into the microphone then. Let me know when you're going to do it. I'll take my headset off.
No, I'm okay.
What did you think to Pereira? Because we all have an expectation that Pereira is going to come in bouncing off the walls.
Yes.
Because he's calmed down. He's had three fights in a row now, and he's looked a bit calmer and a bit more.
Oh, well, I didn't think when he backflipped off the weigh-ins. If I was his coach, oh my God.
Yeah, you see him just tearing his knee apart. It's like that Johnny Walker. That's what we were talking about, the Johnny Walker super team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so what is it? Sunglasses. Oh, I like him as a fighter as well. Sunglasses. Ferguson.
Tony. So we're going to make a super team sponsored by those, you know, those indoor trampoline parks, like Gravity and stuff. And that's going to be their MMA gym. We're gonna make a cage trampoline for them, and we've got Tony Ferguson, we've got Michel Pereira, we've got
Johnny Walker.
Who else? Who goes in the Gravity Super Team? That's another one you can put in the comments.
Do you have one, JB? You look like you're thinking about it.
Manel Kapp's a good one. Yeah, he's always springing and flying and stuff. You could even put Cyril in there, although he wasn't particularly airborne this weekend. They could come out to Jamiroquai and anti-gravity. Anti-gravity. That'd be cool, I reckon. I'd watch that shit. Why not? Backflipping all over the place. Anyway, I thought Michel Pereira looked good. He's got three unanimous decision wins now. Nico Price, Chaos Williams, and Fiao, as well as that rear naked choke in the third against Imadaev. So he's pacing himself. He's fighting into the later rounds. He would have won against Diego Sanchez had he not need him illegally. So it's basically he's learned his lesson from the Tristan Connolly fight, where he flipped himself into a cardio hole.
Well, the only thing that I mentioned to you while we were watching the fight is that he always looks like the bigger fighter. He always looks like he's, you know, like, I can walk you down because I'm so much massively bigger than you. But he's moving around and that kind of...
He's moving around like he's moved up a weight class.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's fighting bigger guys, yeah. But then I think that's more of a reflection of his confidence in those ranges. Because, like, if he's got space, he's a bit more... I mean, he's not stationary. He's never stationary. But he's a bit more kind of comfortable in his posture when he was being pressured, because Fiao was just trying to back him up all the time to get into boxing range. You could see that there's a bit of like anxiety in the movement. It's a little bit like, can't get trapped up against the fence, you know, and then he's trying to bounce off in different directions. I just think that's because he is the bigger guy. He looked bigger and stronger. You would think that if he tucked up and started trading punches, he'd probably have the advantage in power. But he just doesn't seem confident in that range. Like, that was, that's either why he's all the way out and he's like poking and prodding at the midsection, that was a nice technique,
yeah.
A front kick to the midsection. Or when he was closed down, he would level change even if he didn't really want the takedown. I don't know. I don't know whether he's got what it takes to get into the top of the division. I don't see anything particularly like stand out in his game that makes him look particularly calculated. Like, if I look at the guys in the top, so let's look outside the top 10. So you've got Salikov, who's an excellent striker. And I mean, Pereira's got a chance of catching him with something wild, but I think Salikov's just generally an all-round better striker. Ponzinibbio's definitely a more polished striker, even if he's got a smaller skill set. And the Leech can take a hell of a shot and doesn't do anything particularly reckless.
Yeah.
Like, they're all bad fights. And then you're into Jeff Neal and Chimaev and Michael Chiesa. I don't know. I mean, I just don't see anything particularly special in his game that sets him apart from other welterweights. He might find himself a bit of a gatekeeper.
If he would have that final finishing thing, like final finishing component, that wouldn't be the case because he's able to move in ways that majority of the people in the division aren't, yeah. Right? And majority of the people in the whole roster aren't.
For sure.
But I think it's the fact that it's like a decision. Like, after, I know he had the rear naked choke, but when he's fighting, you're kind of, or that's how I felt when I was watching it. I was just kind of wait till he got clipped while doing something crazy.
Mm.
You know, it's almost like, oh, if only you would calculate that craziness just a little bit. If you just hone it and control it and direct it into, because he's huge, he can generate power and he can definitely knock somebody out.
Mm-hmm. But then what did you do against Fila when he had him hurt? Like, he hit him with a good couple of punches. Andre rocked back and was hurt and went in for a flying knee and didn't connect. And then he landed, threw a couple more shots and hurt him again and then tried to throw the flying knee again to get the finish. He's too obsessed with being getting those highlight reel finishes. And I don't think it helped in his UFC debut coming in and getting one over Danny Roberts. Because I would imagine that from up until that point, like, I mean, his record coming into the UFC was, what, 21-9 was his record. Like, he's had a lot of fights, a lot of experience, and a lot of, like, wild stuff, flying whatevers. Quite a few submissions on his record as well. But then coming into the UFC, and as he was walking out, they were hyping him up, and he was doing backflips on the stage and stuff. And then you can imagine what his life was like the day before his UFC debut and the day after when he woke up and opened his phone and all of a sudden flying knee videos are all over the place. It reinforces. Same thing with Diego Sanchez, right?
I was just going to mention that.
It just reinforces that, oh, okay, I'll do this, right? You know? Yeah. Like, if you reward the dog every time he barks at the doorbell, he's going to fucking bark at the doorbell every time, right? It's the same thing. Like, he's barking at the same doorbell, and I think he's calmed down a bit because he's felt that exhaustion in the Connolly fight. But I don't know as he's... He's applying his physical attributes as well as he could be. I think he could be much sharper in close range than he is. I don't know. I don't know what his training's like though. I bet he's a fucking handful to train. Can you imagine? No. Stay on the floor this time.
Jab.
20-kilo ankle weights on the motherfucker just to hold him down. I was a bit disappointed for Fiao. I think there's some interesting fights in the UFC for him, but they're always going to be kind of bangers. Like someone like a Brian Barberena would be fun. Someone that's going to, you know, quite happy to stand and grapple a little bit and, you know, trade a bit.
Do you agree that it was just because he was only like throwing punches, like boxing focus?
Yeah, he could have done a lot more to slow the movement of Pereira down, especially because, I mean, we talked about this. Like he had one of the two components of footwork that you need to control someone that moves a lot. He understands that he needs to keep that person between himself and the fence. So he's controlling the center of the cage. But he wasn't closing one door to walk them onto the next. And that's like the next component that he would have needed. And had he had that component, then he would have been able to start chopping into the legs of Pereira. So like you limit the movement by trapping them against the fence and giving them three options, or four if you're Pereira, because he's got up as well. So your three options for movement is left, right, and level change. Mm-hmm. As I'm then pressing forward, if I then lower my stance or threaten that rear uppercut or the knee, then I can discourage the level change. Yeah. So then I'm cutting that down to 50-50. I've got left or right options now. Now if I take a small step to my left, I close that right door for them, which means that I know they're being forced towards my right hand. And then I can do what I want with that. I can hit them with my right hand. I can kick them in the body. I can low kick them. But like, you cut down their options, which then changes your options. But he wasn't doing that part of his game.
Yeah.
He was just, okay, let me walk into range. And then once I'm close enough to box, then I'll throw punches.
Yeah.
And that was the disconnect there. I see it a lot. But then, like, we were watching... We watched loads of Nigel Benn yesterday, you know, like Chris Eubank, and just fucking awesome boxers. And there's a lot more going on there, but then they've got a much smaller skill set to deal with. But then if you think that could be transplanted into MMA in a much better way than it already is, that's the gist of it. Anyway, co-main event. Let's talk about the big two. Bullshit. Yeah, I know. Well, so
I'm about to flip the table. And cry.
She was ready.
I'm starting
angry.
To get emotional. I got up. I couldn't even. Well, I got up like while watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was doing like this way too much, and I'm like, I'm just gonna stand up. That's it. I can't.
So the context of the day is that we went to bed last night because it's squad sparring on a Sunday morning. So we got up, left phones in flight mode, went to the gym. Watched 2 hours of sparring. There was an embargo on any conversation around UFC, which is difficult in an MMA gym, as you can imagine. Then we went over to a local village to get coffee and supplies from the farmer's market. And someone bumped into us there.
Yeah.
And he was like, love your analysis, love your shows. Did you watch the fights last night? Holy shit, there was loads of grappling in the main event. And we was like,
No, don't tell us.
So we've got all the way back to home, and we just sat and watched the whole event. All
at
the way
a farmer's
through.
Market, we got told. Like, not an MMA place. It wasn't me, like, accidentally pressing Instagram 50 times and then going, no, and, like, flicking it out. It was at a farmer's market.
His two dogs
market.
Were having a scrap, like, the co-main event, like, Figueiredo Moreno. Oh, these dogs were beautiful, weren't they? He had a puppy that was about 8 months that was constantly trying to bite the lead of his older dog that was about 8 years.
And his
years,
own lead to attack yeah. some other dogs.
Wicked. Anyway, it's amazing where you find MMA fans. So the point is, we managed to get all the way home without watching any of them. So I don't even know what the repercussions are on social media. I know we got a couple of questions at the press conference about the decision.
Yeah.
But I scored it for Moreno. Right. I thought that when the decision was being read, I thought Moreno was going to take at least 3 rounds.
Jamie, just cover your face.
You thought Figueiredo won it, did you? Yeah.
No.
I mean, maybe we're a bit biased because we like Moreno. I don't dislike Figueiredo at all.
But I don't feel like I was being biased by thinking Moreno won the fight.
You kind of sounded like you were biased during the fight, if I'm honest. Fucking get him. Fuck him up, get him.
I didn't say that.
You kind of did. And then you were complaining about Figueiredo clawing at his eyes when he was escaping bottom position.
You mean like his escape?
If it was the other way around, yeah, it was the eye claw escape, the traditional eye claw escape.
No, why fight for underhooks, reverse shrimps, anything, you know? Yeah, you just whack in
that's
the
it.
Eye.
That's it. People always pull away from eye pokes, so you could just, you know, it worked well for him. Anyway. I thought Moreno won. I've not even looked at UFC stats, so this will be quite interesting. I had Moreno winning at least 3 rounds. I thought he lost 1 round. And I know that Moreno got knocked down. I mean, what, there were 3 knockdowns.
Yeah, but how much of it was him like also being off balance and not a straight?
Yeah.
Like I know there was definitely that knockdown with the right that he went for the choke, but because he was so like heavy on his lead leg and also getting kicked there, he was pulling that leg back and kind of like taking it to fall down with the momentum to his right.
Yeah.
And one of them, like, he fell, but he also like pointed at Figueiredo and
he
was like,
a big
yeah,
right hand at
yeah,
the same
it clipped
time.
You.
Yeah.
So
I think he'd made a decision to be in range and take some of those low kicks the way he did. Like if you're in range for calf kicks, you've either got two options: you try and defend the calf kick, or you try and discourage them from throwing it again. And it looked to me like instead of dealing with calf kicks all the way through the fight I'm going to put myself in range, and every time he throws them, I'm going to smack him with something just to put him off doing it. And, I mean, he did take a few good calf kicks, but then he also landed some good low kicks.
Good punches. Like
that spinning heel kick to the leg.
In the first round, that was...
Did you hear what he said to Mystery at the press conference?
Yeah, because I'm a ninja.
I'm a ninja, yeah. I don't know. I mean,
Mystery's like, yeah, people are going to be practicing. And I was like, oh, am I that predictable?
we're definitely going to see that at the gym tomorrow morning, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, by me. Well,
okay, let's have a look at the stats here. So,
okay.
I mean, and I know obviously this is irrelevant because the stats don't tell us the story. But so in the first round, Figueiredo landed 15 of 23 significant strikes to 10 of 34 for Moreno, and landed one of three takedowns with a minute 18 control. So statistically, you've got to go with Figueiredo that round. Second round, Moreno outstruck him by 9 shots, 28 to 19. Slightly lower success rate, but then, you know, I don't buy the counting of these things anyway, because they're not taking into account feints and setups. No one scored takedowns that round, although Figueiredo tried 4, apparently. So, Moreno round for me, that one. Okay, so the third round, Figueiredo knocked him down twice, but was outstruck by a few shots, but also got a takedown. So, again, a Figueiredo round there, I would say, on the stats. Fourth round, Moreno outstruck him by 5 shots and defended 1 takedown. I mean, I know this doesn't tell the whole story, but then Figueiredo landed 18, but with 1 knockdown. Yeah, you've got to score the knockdowns quite highly, but then he only knocked him down in 2 rounds.
But there was quite a few like moments where
I need to watch it again. I've only watched it once. I need to watch it again. I need to watch it again.
I feel like I should watch. Look, Jamie, stop looking smug.
Because the thing is,
no coffee next time.
I need to watch it because the thing is, like I was watching it with like we've not watched it having a prior knowledge of the result.
Yeah,
so as I'm watching it, I'm scoring it as I'm watching it like it's live. And I thought Moreno won. I'm going to have to watch it again.
There was a lot of shots where he hurt Figueiredo. And
yeah, but he just doesn't have the same power as Moreno.
But
Figueiredo.
Not only that, because like Moreno was landing hard shots, but since he was taking that shot, like those kicks to the leg, you have to think like the momentum was also being swayed while he was moving, and he moves a lot more. So if you get hit with a shot and you're kind of more like prompt for it, you're less likely to lose balance or go off.
So do you think they're scoring the low kicks too highly then?
Yeah, I think they're scoring the low kicks way
Let's
too
have a look
highly.
Where we're at. So Figueiredo
that's an accurate, like that's a, I guess like an acceptable defense.
He was tucking them up a lot of the time. Yeah, of course. And knowing that he's going to land on his knee, like worst case scenario, he's in on a takedown. But I need to watch it again. I need to watch it again. I was, like I said, I was confident that he'd won the decision when they read it out. I was surprised.
Were you surprised by his reaction, how he was just like...
I was surprised how well he took it, because I felt like he would be sure that he'd won. Yeah, you know, even with the knockdowns, like he knows how many shots he was landing and how successful he was being. And he also has a much better understanding of the shots that he landed that would have hurt Figueiredo,
mm-hmm.
which we don't get a clear look of because Figueiredo takes a shot so well. And Moreno doesn't have the same kind of power. But there were certainly a couple of times, particularly that little roll left hook that he's got.
Yeah.
A couple of times he caught Figueiredo with that. And if that was the opposite way around as far as the power exchange, I think he would have gone down. But yeah, I've got to watch it again. I've got to watch it again. It was a hell of a fight. It was a hell of a fight. I am a big fan of Moreno, so I may have been a bit biased, but I do think he won it.
So would you like to see them fight again? Or no,
I'm sick of watching them fight. I want to watch them fight other people in the division. I don't mind them fighting again down the line. But the best thing about trilogies is when they have a bit of time in between to like change,
mm-hmm.
to adapt, like learn from the last time they faced one another. Like, again, we go back to Chris Eubank and Nigel Benn. Like, they both, I think, had 3 or 4 fights in between when they'd faced one another. Like, that's more of a storyline, because then you can go, this was the first time they fought. Like, Izzy and Whittaker coming up is perfect. Because then you've got, this is Izzy. He came in as the interim champ. He beat Whittaker, who was the current reigning champion. And now he's been on this amazing win streak where he's beaten all these guys to defend his belt. Whittaker, on the other hand, he kind of fell off a cliff after that fight, and then he had the rebuild narrative of getting back in the gym, loving grappling again, making his return against Darren Till in Fight Island and having a rough first round but working his way through. And, you know, like that's a good story, because now when they come back together, you don't go, oh, well, we've just seen this, so it's probably going to look the same.
It's kind of like the Max Holloway. Even though they did fight like right off the bat with each other,
yeah,
there is now this, did you see what he's done to his opponents exactly. The last couple of fights?
And it made sense after the first one, because that first one was so close with Max and Volkov, as well as with Moreno and Figueiredo. It makes sense that they went, okay, majority draw, let's do it again.
Yeah.
But after Moreno won the next time around, there was no reason to run it back again. Like, they should have both fought somebody else.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen Figueiredo fight Askarov, and I would have liked to have seen Moreno defend against Pantoja, because that's a loss that he could come back on. It's just like, it just ties the division up, and now Pantoja must have been sitting there watching, going, oh, fuck, we're another 6 months now, or I'm going to have to fight one of these killers that's coming up. Like, Askarov's fighting Kai Kara France. I mean, it's a fight he should win, but if he doesn't, that puts Kai Kara France right up near the top as well. Brandon Royval had a great win against Bontarin. There's loads of guys waiting around. I kind of wanted Figueiredo to move up a weight class, but we'll see what happens. Now he's got to defend his belt against Moreno.
So what did you think of the post-fight?
And all the fucking barnacles hanging on to him. Oh, I hate it. It's not your fucking time. It's not your time. You can wear the biggest, loudest, fucking studded, sparkly dickhead sunglasses you want. You can, like the thing is, the only person that legitimately should have been in there, and I was even cringing at him being there, was Henry Cejudo. Because he's a fucking champ. Like, okay, dude. But
he was the one not doing anything, though. Like,
He's there, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they're all there. But, like you've got Captain Knobhead on one side, like, always trying to get his face in the fucking... You know what I mean? I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
Nice person.
He's one stage away from having glasses that say, look at me, and they fucking light up with a button. It's just a bit much. It's a bit much. Anyway, and then on the other side, you've got Walid Ismail, who's Paulo Costa's coach. Mm-hmm. And I was ready for that guy to jump me. I thought he was going to jump me in Fight Island.
I remember you telling me.
Yeah, I was legit. Yeah. I was ready for it. I was like, okay, this guy's going to be there. I'm expecting him to attack me in a lobby. Like, when he was fighting in Pride, he was a fucking maniac. He was a loose cannon. Like, testosterone up to the eyeballs. No fucking rules. No drug testing. You know, making sure you're getting jabbed on the way out to the ring. He was like... That's how he looked in the corner. And like, now when you watch him at the side of the cage when fights are going on, you can still see his, like...
I think he's still on it.
Yeah, it's still there. But then he's over Figueiredo's shoulder... Skyping like 16 people on his phone at the same time. Like, I don't know whether he's paying for an appearance on fucking pay-per-views or something. Whole set of fancy fucking pearly white teeth. Like, Delay and Joe Rogan trying to get photos. Hang on. Let's do one with the bunny filter. Hang on. Wait. Let's do this one. It looks like I'm still on steroids. Look how big we are. Look. Fucking. And then on the other side, it flips over to Moreno, who's standing on his own up against the fence, and he's like, it is what it is. He could have been angry. He could have been, you motherfuckers. He could have been, we need to run this back. That was he was just, it is what it is. Same at the press conference as well.
Mm.
A beautiful exhibition of composure. And even when he was asked about his fans at the press conference, you kind of saw him open up a little bit, but then put it all back in the bag.
I think he, like... Well, when he got asked questions in Spanish, he was a little bit more like emotion filled. I think it was a lot easier for him in English to shut that down, because you have to think, translating how you're feeling in a different language is not necessarily that easy, or explaining how you're feeling in that moment is not that easy. So when you speak to somebody, I guess for him in Spanish, that you can tell that the person asking you question idolizes you, right? Yeah. It's not just like some guy that is just trying to get an interview and questions and doesn't really care. It's like, then you kind of, I guess, ingest what it means to the Hispanic people, what it means to the Mexicans, and what it really means. And that you kind of, it's harder to hone in.
Do you think because, so going back to the translation thing, like if he's answering a question in English,
mm-hmm.
is he going through a process of thinking, of translating it in his head, do you think? Do you think his English is at the point where he now can think in English if he's being questioned?
No, I think his Spanish is a lot better than his English.
So then if he's thinking in Spanish, it's immediate, which means he can connect with the emotion quicker. Okay. So like the language, the translation process is like helping him keep a mask up. That's interesting.
Well,
I need to learn another language so I don't burst into tears at the press conference.
That's just like my personal take on it, because I feel like when you're going to speak a different language, you also have to think about how you can really say that. So it gives you that extra moment. And if you're also a lot more limited in the vocabulary that you do have. Mm-hmm. So you have to think, and there's a lot of fighters, for example, that I'm watching a lot of French fighters right now, and they all go, oh, I'm very, very happy. And probably in French, they could say a whole bunch of stuff that can really tell you how they feel. But then they'll just repeat one word and then get frustrated that they're not, and they'll be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They can't quite say what they mean. Yeah, that, yeah, that makes sense.
I will say in the post-fight for Figueiredo, there was that small moment where...
You loved that whole team around him, didn't you? You loved that whole everybody getting in on, like sharing in the glory, like we're all a part of the team. Everybody get a face in here. You loved it.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
You see, you set me up. So I do all the shit talking on it. And then you can just sit there and it makes me look like I'm being a bitch.
Well, like, but before it all started and it got deviated from what it actually was, there was that moment that you saw that he had a little bit of pain. Yeah. And you saw he was like, man, I've been away from my family for 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've given up so much for this. Like, so much sacrifice.
When they were booing, you mean?
Yeah. So much sacrifice has gone into. And it was a little bit less of him being, like, the bad guy, the villain or stuff. But it was like, okay, even if I was that, just appreciate how much I put into this. Because it was a lot of sacrifice. And I kind of felt like that pain that he portrayed it very well. They didn't say that. They ended up saying, translating that far in the end, but it was already like the mask entourage was on to the response. So you didn't get that raw,
like the heartfelt part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to see a rematch straight away?
I mean, I can watch them fight every single weekend and be just as excited.
They've missed the opportunity now to put a break in it, because now they've got to rematch because the belt's gone back and forth. Now they have to do the rematch. Whereas if, like, Moreno could have won the belt and not defended it against Figueiredo immediately.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they'll do it immediately.
Now Moreno will win it, and then Figueiredo's going to demand a rematch, and then we'll just have the Figueiredo-Moreno division, and we'll just move on. We'll create another 125 division for everybody else to play.
No, I think maybe Moreno might fight Pantoja next, and then Figueiredo might fight the winner of Kai Kara France and Askarov,
yeah. And they've set Askarov maybe, up for a win there, I think.
And then maybe they'll fight each other again, but I don't think they'll go straight back into each other.
But that makes me nervous for Moreno then, because Pantoja's a killer, and he's already beaten him twice, and I don't know. I think they might do the rematch immediately. But then even if they don't, that's going to be a 5-round fight. I mean, Moreno's gotten a lot better since the last time he fought Pantoja, but Pantoja's a killer as well.
I was once I think twice, I was in the, what do you call it, in the warm-up area with Pantoja, and I just saw him go, like, just simple, man. You went from one to the next, controlling one position, controlling the next, controlling the frames, the hips, the arm, and it didn't look like this. Well, like the grappling version of Pereira, it didn't look like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm going to go for this weird submission. I'm going to put my foot in and then do that. It was, no, I'm going to shut you down and just have crisp, beautiful grappling. I just remember just watching him being like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's what grappling
is. I hope he gets
like
an opportunity. I think he's the only one that's not matched up in this division at the moment. Aside from
Royval.
I think
he's injured, though. Because I think he did get... Yeah, I think he was offered the Brandon Moreno fight. And I think the reason that they didn't fight right away was because he was injured. But I'm not entirely sure.
Fair enough. Okay. So, all right. Main event then. I know the answer to this question. But
another heartbreak,
anyway.
Man.
Did it go how you expected it to go?
No. I thought there was going to be a lot of wrestling, but I thought that because of how MMA Factory is right now, there's a lot of guys from Dagestan, a lot of great wrestlers that are going to fight very, very soon.
Mm.
And
they're
also
on the Ares card.
Yeah,
right?
they are on the Ares card. And also that his Marcel, I think, is the guy's name. If I get it wrong, I'm sorry. Which is from Belarus. So that, you know, like, I thought that with the game plan, it was going to be... I know he's been kicking a lot more. So those kicks didn't really surprise me. One of the back kicks he threw.
That was nice.
Oh, that was really nice.
Yeah, there was a point where Ngannou looked really tired. He looked really tired. But then it's like he got his second wind and started nailing takedowns.
When he went for the leg lock, I was just...
So, in the first two rounds, so did you have, you had Cyril Gane win in the first two rounds, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he outpointed him, not by a great deal. I mean, if we look at total strikes instead of significant, he had 10 additional strikes in the first round and 9 in the second. So it wasn't a massive amount, but then... I don't know. I there was a lot of times when Ngannou looked like, okay, I need to keep moving forward. He's not doing anything that's particularly bothering me, but I'm also not able to do anything at all, which means he was just getting outpointed gradually and he was starting to get a bit pissed off with it. And I think it was more like a psychological fatigue. So he's like, oh, there he is again. And he's wanting to react, but then Gan's gone and, you know. Mm-hmm. And Cyril gave him a lot more respect than he did in the sparring videos that we've seen. Like, he was not anywhere near him in those first couple of minutes. He was on his toes. He was moving, even a little bit more anxious than he has been in other fights.
Yeah, because he knows the power that he has, and it's also in sparring. Like, you can't just go throw like haymakers
and throw
full power, because that's just not the point of sparring.
Mm.
And he knew here that Francis had to go to like, you know.
Were you impressed with his wrestling, Ngannou?
Yeah, I was. I was impressed with the wrestling because, like, everything was very structurally sound.
Yeah.
Like, his head was up. His movement was up. I did like that, like, duck under that Cyril tried to do. That was really slick.
Yeah.
I thought
generally both of their grappling was good. I think when they first locked up and Cyril felt the actual strength of Ngannou and not sparring strength Ngannou, not Ngannou like, okay, we're sparring for rounds here. Like Ngannou, like, I'm going to crush your ribs and take you down.
Yeah.
There were a couple of moments where you could see Cyril up against the fence just getting kind of crushed by that body lock. And then once Ngannou was in top position, like, he looked like the Hulk. Like Cyril didn't look like he was able to move him a great deal without expending loads of energy to do it.
Which is why it surprised me the most when he went for the footlock, because you have been under him for like the previous rounds, and you felt how difficult it was to get him off or just to create any sort of space for the underhook, for the single leg, to turn it around, to then, man, like in jiu-jitsu, for example, if you do that and the guy gets up, like, the other guy gets 2 points.
Yeah, well,
it counts as a sweep.
On UFC stats, it's got Ngannou listed as getting a reversal in the last round. I, to be honest, I mean, I thought he did as well. I thought, because we played it back, didn't we? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that Cyril had sat up for the ankle lock.
Tucked his leg and he went for it.
But then, if you look at that last round, so Ngannou had landed 5 strikes and Cyril had landed 7. Cyril was the one that got the takedown out of the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 2 sub attempts, but he lost the fight on control. He lost the round on control. Had he not gone for that ankle lock, would you have scored the fight to him, given the fact that he probably won the first two?
I would have given the fight to him, yeah. Because there wasn't the third and the fourth, I wouldn't have scored it a 10-8. So given the fact that the first two, I would have scored it for Cyril.
Well,
I would have scored the last. Although on the 3 and 4, Francis, I think, did more than what Cyril did on the first and the second. But that's not the way scoring goes in the UFC. It's not like total... And see overall who did more in the fight. It's per round. So if we're going per round, it was even coming into the fifth.
Yeah.
So, but that's also like that's his 11th fight, the third year doing MMA. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll come back in a little bit more and be kind of like Canelo with the Mayweather fight. Like, I learned so much from that fight and I came and I evolved and it kind of made him a... overall, just unstoppable force, basically.
Kind of like Ngannou after the first fight against Stipe.
Yeah.
So, do you think Gan wins in a rematch if the rematch happens immediately? If they fought straight away again, do you think Gan learned enough in that fight to come back and beat him straight away, or does he have to go and weigh and get more skills to beat him. Because I think he was the more skilled fighter going in. I think he may have underestimated how actually physically strong Ngannou is, and also how good his wrestling is.
Yeah,
but I was not expecting him to. I mean, what did he do? 5-6 takedowns in the whole fight?
Like when he got it and just slammed it. You just have to. The thing is with double legs, and not all of them, but some takedowns. Man, when people like drive their shoulder right here, it takes the wind out of you, and you're just thinking like, my chest is broken, I can't breathe, and you just like discouraged from everything in life. Yeah.
And
in
he's
that
not heavy
moment.
And soft like Roy Nelson either. Like he's heavy and made out of rock as well. I mean, but it wasn't even just that. Like that was good timing. He caught it and he elevated him and took him down. But like the technical wrestling was really nice as well. Mm. Like and even the control on the ground, like binding the wrist once he'd taken him down.
Yeah.
Like he did that a couple of three times. It's clear whatever they're doing in Ngannou's training camp is working really well, and they need to stick at it.
But it looks like they've given him, like, just kind of trimmed up the fat where, like this is the pathway that is the most easy. You go here to there, you grab this and you grab that. And mm-hmm. I think that's such a great way of it's not like they gave him a white belt and went, like, go to jiu-jitsu class and I'll see you in 10 years, mm-hmm. see if you're good now.
Yeah,
you know,
they've
like,
given him what he could put to use immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I feel like that's what the best thing for him was that. And as more MMA fighters start teaching MMA, I think these paths will come, and then it won't take as long for fighters to get into a higher level because they won't have to filter out that whole jiu-jitsu, wrestling, or boxing thing. They'll have those pathways easier, like already in front of them.
Yep. Some of the fat trimming will already be done before it gets passed on to them. Like you got to think, Ngannou was able to finish that Kimura against Anthony Hamilton, and they taught him that in the changing rooms while he was warming up.
Yeah.
You know, like he's able to put things to use like very quickly, but like his wrestling ability is clearly improved. You know, it was improved against Stipe in the second time around. I think he's a force to be reckoned with, because when you've got that kind of power, you can apply it to anything. And that's always going to be the deciding factor at heavyweight, isn't it? Mm. It's whether you can catch someone and knock them out. And for as good as, for as technical as Ciryl Gane is, that's one thing that we haven't seen. He has to accumulate damage on his opponents.
Yeah.
So if Francis keeps improving at this pace, it's going to be a while until Ciryl gets to a stage where he's going to be able to make a good argument for a title shot. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the heavyweight division now, which is nice because it can start moving on a bit now. So we've got Stipe just underneath Ciryl Gane at number two. Derek Lewis lower than that. Then Curtis Blaydes, Volkov, Rosenstruik, Daukaus. So in that group at the top there, Stipe is the most likely one to get another title shot unless he takes another fight. But I think they're going to put Lewis in there. Derek Lewis against Ngannou too. What do you reckon?
Well, he said he'll do it if it's three rounds.
Well, no, Derek Lewis said that.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'll fight Ngannou if it's three rounds. But I think with the Francis that we saw, well, yesterday, I don't think Derek Lewis will be able to beat him.
No.
Because he's been able to, like, he didn't even say anything to Fernand after, you know, he had like a conversation. So it was something that there was a personal connection to it, and everybody talking to him about sparring and everybody talking to him about the fight, plus his knee being messed up, mm-hmm. plus,
the drama with the UFC,
the drama and we'll get onto to the belt a little bit later, but with all of that going on, he was still able to stay composed.
Yeah.
And that,
what do you think Derek Lewis was thinking when he was watching that then? Because bear in mind, his, like, Derek Lewis's last loss in his last streak since he lost to JDS, his last loss was to Ciryl Gane, where he couldn't touch him, got outpointed. And that now he's just watched Ngannou, who's a comparable power puncher, also now have wrestling. Like, do you think Derek Lewis is watching that and thinking, oh, Jesus, he's a handful? Or is Derek Lewis's takedown defense good enough to stop Ngannou?
I mean, how good can you take down defense be when your legs are like buckled in?
But it is pretty good though. I mean, he does scramble well.
You get like that extra. I don't know, it looks to me like Yeah, no.
So you think you're thinking Ngannou beats him then, do you? Do you think he beats Stipe the next time around as well?
Yeah, I think he beats Stipe the next time around as well.
I think Ngannou's the best. I think Gan has the best chance of beating Ngannou out of everybody in this division right now. Maybe there's an argument for John Jones coming in because that's a fight that we all want to see.
And I think that's maybe why there's a little bit of like, yeah, I'm not sure what the next, because he knew that the next fight is going to be John Jones.
If it's John Jones, he needs paying for it because there's a lot of money being made.
And if he was still under that same contract, maybe he wouldn't have, you know, been able to like argue that money. So maybe it's the foresight of seeing that that's the next possible fight. Because if you look at the division, there's not really any that could outdo this fight, I think, in interest.
No. No.
Because, I don't think anybody wants to see Derek Lewis and Francis again.
I don't, unless it's
different from the first fight.
I don't think you can sell the Stipe fight because Stipe's not been back in there since they fought last.
Mm.
I think Stipe would have done well to have a fight against someone to line himself up. So, okay, so you're Ngannou. You've just won the belt, so you're the undisputed heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
Your contract's come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
You've got options to go into boxing. Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, whoever else, options there. Dana didn't put the belt around his waist. Mick Maynard did. So there's clearly some tension there. And all the questions that Ngannou got at the press conference, he was very much, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Where does he go next? What's the best call for him? And what do you think he's going to do if they're different? Do you think he should go into boxing?
I mean, depends on like what he wants. Is he looking for like a legacy thing? Is he looking for a payday? Is he looking? He seems very keen, and he's always seemed keen on boxing. So I think he should do it just because he's always wanted to. That's like saying I've always wanted to, compete in something. You know, go ahead and do it. Like, check out that bucket list before your career comes to an end. And he said, "Yeah, I'm getting older. That I have a limited time." Yeah, I don't know. I think he should, just because of how good like his wrestling is and everything has gotten up. So much work has been put into the evolution of his MMA game and not necessarily just his boxing game. And I know that one of his coaches is one of the trainers at, Mayweather's gym. That's not necessarily like related, because in Mayweather's gym, you can also just come in and train out of there. It doesn't mean you're necessarily connected to the whole thing.
But a boxing coach would pick him up in a second if he decided that's the route he was going.
Well, anybody would pick him up in a second because he's a big name and big he has puncher. Money, you know, like you can get a lot behind him. So that position, it's kind of like Jake Paul. Like he's in a position where anybody's going to pick him up and train him because he has all the resources.
But then if he's going into boxing, he's going into boxing, A, because he wants to be a boxing champion, in which case he's probably going to have 10 fights before he's ready to fight for a belt and be a reigning champion.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's going to take the big money fights, which are names which I just don't see him comparing against. Like, you put him in there against someone like Deontay Wilder, and Wilder's got that wild explosive power at the same time as Ngannou, but he's crafted that for boxing. And we know how effective he is with that. And I also think he's going to be more measured with his conditioning as well, because Ngannou's going to be trying to put everything into every punch, and Wilder doesn't do that. He delivers power shots intentionally. I think Tyson Fury would run him in a circle.
Yeah.
I think Anthony Joshua would just outpoint him and not let him touch him. Like, you're struggling to find heavyweights that... that he would be competitive against.
One that beat Anthony Ruiz. Joshua. Yeah.
So then, like, but then, like, you put him in there against a heavyweight boxer, and then say he loses two fights. He might make $10 million, $15, $20 million, maybe, two or three fights, but he'll probably lose. And then his options are, well, let's go back to MMA. And the UFC are going to shit on him when it comes to contract negotiations if he does that. If he goes away and has one boxing match just to make a point, they'll shit on him, or they'll say they don't want him, knowing full well that there's no heavyweight division anywhere else. Like, if he went over to one championship, he's up against Brandon Vera and Arjun Singh Bulla. He takes their heads clean off on the same night. Like, he could go over to Glory Kickboxing, and then he's got someone like Alistair Overeem and Rico Verhoeven. That might be a good shout. But that's not going to be the same kind of money. No, of course. It's not going to be the same kind of money. Bellator has not got a heavyweight division to really offer. I mean, Ryan Bader would
I don't think he would fight in a, like, I don't think he'd go to ONE or Bellator or anything else, unless it was like kind of like the,
if he hasn't got an option,
view to the UFC and they're paying him great, like PFL for example would be like, yeah, I'm gonna put big money on the table,
yeah,
then he might go, but kind of to make a point.
But if he does that, which would be great, you know, it'd be great for that organization, it's still like signing Cyborg. Like, you've still not really got opponents to put in front of them.
Yeah.
Like, there are heavyweights floating around the world, but you need legitimate heavyweights, and they're pretty much all on the UFC roster.
And he's already... There's not... Other than Cyril, there wasn't really, like a prospect that you're like, oh, yeah, but you might be running away from this. And the only fight would be Jon Jones. No. And they kind of, like... They kind of spent that last fight card they put bet on, like, Cyril to win.
Mm. Yeah, I think they were expecting Cyril to win the decision and to put Ngannou in a rough negotiating position. Yeah. I hope he doesn't go to boxing, because I think it really limits his options over the coming years. I think if he stays in the UFC, he can run this division and he can continue to improve and keep negotiating himself into better positions. Because he's the heavyweight champion of the world. There's no reason why he shouldn't be getting paid a hefty chunk of money to be fighting.
Yeah.
Every single one of these guys. I mean, we talk about fighter pay all the time. It's very rare that we have someone that was willing to stand their ground. And usually what happens in the history of mixed martial arts and in the history of the UFC, if one person has enough equity in the sport as a brand and they're willing to stand their ground for long enough, they usually disappear into an office with Dana and come out and never mention it again. And I've seen that happen a whole bunch of times. Like, sometimes there'll be a fighter and they'll start to say, fighter pay, this and that, etc., etc. I demand more. Everybody else demands more. And then Tuesday morning comes around and they go into UFC offices and they come out and there's a photograph of them next to Dana in the lobby and the big smile on their face and a fat back pocket. And then they never mention it again. You know, like, they can be strategic about how they pay people to make sure that, because the thing is, like, if Francis goes, I want more money, we deserve more money, and the UFC go, yeah, you're right, then everyone's going to do it.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to do it, you know? So they have to be really, really careful about how they let these pay increases happen. Really, really cautious. And they always try and bargain you down to make sure that you get in as little as possible, because that sets the precedent across the sport. And the heavyweight champion of the world fighting for $500,000, you can't be in the welterweight division or the bantamweight division and be calling for more than that. And everybody in the championship fights deserves more than that.
Yeah.
So to hold the heavyweight champion down, to hold him to ransom, is holding the whole sport to ransom. And that's what he's fighting against, and I respect him for it. He should sign Jake Paul as his manager. And that what's his name? That wizard guy that Dana was shitting on the other day, who was an accountant for the UFC. He was not an accountant. I went to an award show where he won a big award. Anyway, we've digressed.
Did you see the thing that came up that the whole fight payout was $1.8 million for the entire card, and the right? Wilder Fury fight got $30 million.
Yeah,
I think just that fight.
I wonder, but then, like, you look at that and then you go, okay, now let's have a look what the gate was. So the money that came in on ticket sales, and usually the ticket sale money will rival the fighter pay for mm-hmm. the evening. So then everything else that's being made, that's all in the pocket. Like, there's money that goes into you know, putting the events on, of course, and there's, you know, that comes with a hefty cost. But when something's being ran like this constantly on a week by week basis, it's just a massive, massive amount of money coming in every time, and those figures disappear because we don't know what money is made on the backside. Like, when we see these deals with, like, the NFTs being sold, being produced and stuff, that deal was, what was the deal with the crypto thingy, $175 million?
Yeah.
Like, it's fucking crazy money. Crazy, crazy money. It should be getting to the fighters, and we know this. Anyway, hell of a card. So the next one is Hermanson against Strickland, which we'll be doing next week, because we're jumping a week, aren't we?
Yeah.
All right. Wicked. Good stuff.
Thanks for having me on, even though you wanted Owen instead.
We all love her, don't we, folks? We all love her. Make sure you check out the sponsors. Merino, Unbound Merino. Go onto their website and use the code OUTLAW. that will get you 15% off. And our new sponsor, Pact Coffee.
Yep.
PACTCoffee.com. Go on there, get yourself some coffee. They will deliver it to your door. It is delicious. You'll get one of these as well free if you use the code OUTLAWED. They will send you one of these worth £11. And you'll be all set. And they will deliver coffee to your door whenever you need it. As and when you need it. As much as you need. And it is delicious. And fair trade. Better than fair trade. Check them out. Awesome. Catch you next time.